With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, crime critters. Welcome back to another episode of Hello, My Name is True Crime. Hello, my name is True Crime. Damn it. Hello, my name is Travers.
My name's Kayla. Oh. Hope you guys are doing good today.
I hope so as well.
It's, well, actually, it's the end of the weekend for us, but you guys will be hearing this on Tuesday. And I'm kind of bummed out that the weekend's over.
Me too.
We had a very, very interesting Friday evening. We got locked out.
We did.
Of our car after having a nice dinner.
We did. It was a pleasant dinner. We had a little Asian cuisine, peanut butter chicken. it was really good.
And then we spent the next hour or so.
It was about two hours.
Yeah, in what, maybe 20 degree weather?
Nah, it might have been 25.
Okay, well, it felt cold. While Trav tried to jimmy the door open, but yep. I mean, his mom swooped in to the rescue.
Yeah,
saved
us. So did the kids.
Yeah, but that was fun.
Yeah, that was exciting.
Yeah.
Luckily, I was able to purchase the jimmy for a measly 10 doll hairs from close and nearby Advanced Auto Parts.
Yeah. They were cool. They let us hang out in there.
Yeah, they
did. Until she got there.
Well, I kind of, was like, well, we're paying customers, so if we can hang out anywhere, it'd be here.
Right. They were cool, though.
Yeah, he tried to sell me a car and a gun and all kinds of interesting stuff. Yeah. It was a good time.
It was fun.
We were chatty guys.
Right. I agree.
So, back on track then, I guess. We've got a shout-out to do, don't we?
Yeah,
at least one, right?
Yeah, we do.
I'll let you take the wheel on that one.
Okay. Jasmine. We have our listener, Jasmine, and she was so kind. She reached out to us through the Anchor app and sent us a little voice message, and we got to interact back and forth with her. So that was really awesome.
That was fun.
We enjoyed that a lot. And if you guys want to do something like that, totally just find us on Anchor and you could communicate back and forth with us. It's pretty cool.
It is neat.
Yeah, we enjoyed it a lot.
After we figured out how to freaking do it.
Yeah, that was fun. Trying to.
If you're listening, Jasmine, you got a third take. And by that point, I was just kind of like, you know what? It's probably not going to work anyway, just like the last two times. And I'm irritated, and it's going to show in my voice. She's going to be like, oh my gosh, they're being so mean.
Yeah. And you guys know I'm the techno queen.
Like you listen to...
No, technology. technology
oh,
queen.
Oh, okay.
That's a joke.
That is a joke, yeah.
I'm totally not.
Although she's a little bit more savvy with some of it than I am.
I'm learning. You know, having this podcast has forced me to learn things that I never thought I would know. It's fun, though. Sometimes. When it goes smooth.
Well, of course. Everything's fun when
it
goes smoothly.
Not when I'm having problems. So, guys, today we're going to be talking about the cold medicine killer.
The cold medicine killer.
Yes. And this episode is... It's going to be crazy.
It is going
to
be crazy.
Like always.
I just wanted to point out that the cold medicine killer is such an ominous and cool sounding name for a serial killer.
Mm-hmm.
And
he's not.
He's such a meek little douchebag.
Yeah.
You know, he really doesn't
deserve such a big name.
He doesn't deserve a big name like that.
You know, I think that on quite a few of these given names that they assign to these serial killers and stuff, and I'm just like, ugh. Like the BTK killer, he actually sent in a list the names that he would prefer to be called into like the media.
How pretentious.
They were absurd. I think one was like the Night Phantom or something like completely ridiculous.
Lame.
Yeah. So if you guys don't know, the BTK killer gave himself his name.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's not as cool as the other ones.
No, he's not. Nicknames are way better than call me something along these lines and we'll be good.
Right. Like, who are you?
Lamoid.
Who do you think you are?
Captain BTK Lamoid.
Yes. So, hopefully you guys can tell a big difference in our sound.
Yeah, the quality. Maybe you noticed. Maybe you didn't. Hopefully you did.
Absolutely.
And if not, then hopefully you do now that we brought it to your attention. You'll probably be like, yeah, I'm going to go compare and contrast. Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. What an incredible difference. You guys sound so professional.
You run out of breath there?
Yeah, a little bit.
And it's all thanks to the CA House of Music. CA Music House.
CA House.
Yeah.
Music.
They were awesome.
Yes.
They were really helpful. We went in and I honestly was not really expecting to like find something that I wanted. And he literally pulled everything out that we needed. And we got a pretty good deal on this entire setup. We got the interface.
Mr. Ryan.
Yeah,
another shout out. Shout out number two goes to Ryan. I can't remember your last name, but Ryan at CA House, the guitar guy.
Thanks, Ryan.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, so, one more thing. Last episode, I mentioned that I had been, like, deep into Voices for Justice, the podcast that Sarah Turney is doing, covering her sister Alyssa Turney's disappearance.
Yes.
And, oh my goodness, it's just getting more and more crazy. So if you guys have not yet listened to the podcast, you need to go over now. Well, when you're done listening to ours.
Yeah, not right now, because that would literally interrupt us.
And check it out. I've made Trav start listening to
it. You didn't make me. I did it of my own volition. I was happy
him.
To. She didn't
I
make
made
me.
Him.
Anyway, it's good. She's got a very pleasant voice. And
she's so intelligent.
She's very smart.
You
very,
can tell
very
her
smart.
Wits just in the first, like, 15 minutes of the episode.
Well, even less than that, really. Yeah. But yeah, she's a strong woman.
Mm-hmm. Going head to head with her dad.
She ain't taking
shit.
Girl,
you got some balls.
Well,
proverbial
balls.
Go, Sarah.
You go, girl.
All right, so I guess we can like jump into the episode.
Okay, let's dive in.
With a big splash.
Skabagloosh.
Okay, so Lauren Hugelmeyer and Matt Phelps had a seemingly ideal marriage. They were both active members of the Hope Lutheran Church. Lauren, as a part of her work through the church children and youth ministries, was a Sunday school teacher. And Matt was an aspiring pastor that obtained a degree in missions and evangelism. I always mess it
evangelism.
Up.
Evangelism.
I cannot say it.
That's okay.
The couple had met in middle school, actually. They both lived in Bowling Green, Kentucky, before Lauren moved to Raleigh, North Carolina with her family.
Is it Raleigh?
Raleigh?
Raleigh.
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 Raleigh. Sorry.
It's okay.
My little
I'm sorry,
Ohio
dude.
Mispronounce words and accent. Anyways.
What? There's no accent. You're fine.
So, it wasn't until she had graduated in 2011 from the Appalachian State University there in North Carolina with a degree in business administration and management when Matt reached out to her on social media. And it had been many years since she had known Matt, so understandably she didn't remember him. But the two eventually grew close via social media.
Mm-hmm.
They shared a lot of things in common, like their love of Star Wars, and they shared a love for Christ as well. And that kind of really
Jesus.
Like, brought them together and like sealed their little deal of fate.
Mm-hmm.
Not many were surprised, though, when Matt packed up his life and moved to North Carolina to be with Lauren. I guess he just like packed it all up and amscrayed.
And they were like, well, saw that coming.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of funny if you think about it. Like, it sounds to me like he sort of just weaseled his way into her life, you know? Mm-hmm. And she was like, I don't remember you.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, but I mean, like, I was there, you know? It's like, okay, well, that's cool. You know, yeah, we can talk and stuff.
No, I totally got the exact same kind of vibe from this case as well.
Weasel.
Yeah, weasel. So her family ended up just welcoming in with open arms, and they immediately treated him as if he was just like any other member of their family. And after 2 years of dating, the two ended up getting married on November 11th, 2016. And it's really cool because they based their wedding reception around the Star Wars theme. And it was as perfect for them as, you know, they seemed to be for each other at the time. I might get ridiculed for this, but I'm not like a big Star Wars fan. I think I've watched like maybe one movie. And it's, I don't know, like, I just never really got into it.
I'm sorry, everybody. I tried to change that. I tried to get her to watch it. We have every one of them. Every single one of them. Yeah. We've got the offshoots and whatever you want to call them.
The cartoon
little
versions.
Side projects. We got cartoon versions. We got Lego versions. And this girl, she won't do it. She won't commit.
I think the kids know more about it than I do.
They know more about it than I do.
They know more about a lot of, like, superheroes and I don't know, everything like that.
Indeed.
It's crazy.
It is crazy. They are very intelligent kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I like Star Wars. I grew up with it. It's a thing. I dig it. It's cool. I'd share it with my kids for sure if they didn't know about it already and stuff. But that's pretty campy, you know, like
the
marriage.
Well, I mean, I think it was a cute idea. Like, the pictures were cute that I seen. They were pretty cute.
You
got to see them.
I would like to see these pictures because I have not seen them.
Yeah, it was cute. I think you would think the same. I do. So, after 10 months of marriage, though things seemed to take a huge U-turn, Lauren, who was close with her older sister Beth, had started to confide in her about Matthew's behavior and how he was unable to hold down like a steady job. Lauren worked as an auditor at Quintiles, and she also held three other jobs. That's kind of crazy, like juggling four
nuts
jobs, because her main job was a full-time job.
Mm-hmm.
One of these jobs actually was her passion and personal business with Scentsy, and this was something that she absolutely loved doing. I got sidetracked today on finishing up the, the script for the episode because I ran across her YouTube channel that she had for her Scentsy business, and she was literally the cutest little thing. You could tell what a bubbly personality she had. She was so cute too. And I just got sucked into all of her videos, and I don't even, like, you know, I'm not like a big Scentsy person, but just watching her, like, you know, stroll around and talk about her stuff, it was really
entertaining. Passion and stuff like that.
Exactly. Yeah. So she did this to ensure that the couple could pay their house mortgage and maintain their lifestyle. Well, mostly Matthew's lifestyle.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Although Matthew was working as an STNA at a nursing home before he moved to North Carolina from Kentucky.
Timeout. What's an STNA? Not a timeout for real. No. Like a timeout.
It's a state-tested nursing assistant. So,
STNA. Okay.
Instead of being a nurse or a nurse's assistant, then there's like, it's a level below that. So
he's
a lot
like
of,
the lowest of the low on.
Well, not necessarily. As far as, I mean, like, I guess you could look at it like that. But they do a lot of work with nursing homes.
Okay.
So they are mostly the people that take care of elderly at nursing homes.
When they ship the bed.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So he only continued that line of work for a short while after moving to North Carolina. He had decided to switch directions and become a salesman, but this, though, was not really his strong point. And though Matthew was a good preacher, he wasn't good at sales pitching and would eventually lose his position in sales.
How's he going to sell people on the idea of God and stuff if he can't even sell whatever he was trying to sell?
Well, I mean, I agree. But I mean, after listening to his statement at the trial and even his 911 call, I could kind of see why he wasn't a good salesman. He's very... you can tell just by listening to him speak how, like, almost awkward he is, yeah, and quirky and kind of like withdrawn in a way.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, he definitely has a different kind of a personality, just a little bit that we've seen.
Super nasally, mm-hmm, and he's a mouth breather from hell.
Yeah. Yeah, he is. So he finally settled with a job at Dunlap Lawn Service in Greensboro. Though it wasn't really the best income, Lauren honestly had no problem with picking up extra jobs on the side to keep them afloat. And that's really sad, I think.
That is sad, you because know? Like she's taking, like, she has passions and, mm-hmm, and goals and dreams and stuff like that that she's essentially putting on hold, right, just to make sure that selfish little Matthew can stay at home and do the shit that he wants to do,
yeah,
when he wants to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's unfair. Like,
I agree.
Go get a job and pay for your own shit at the very least.
Right.
You know, instead of, we've all been there.
Yeah.
But
I mean, I think everybody goes to it, like, through a time in their life, like, no matter what it is, where they're home. I mean, after I had our kids, I stayed home for a little while. After your deployment, you stay home for a little while. You know, like, everybody goes through something that kind of just take a break a little bit from whatever their job is, yeah, especially if they're forced to, you know.
Right, and there's nothing wrong with that as long as you're continuing.
But you get back out there. And,
yeah, and you got to live within your means,
oh, yeah,
at all,
absolutely,
times. Otherwise,
that is,
you know,
a big problem with this case.
Yeah.
And, you know, another thing I think is crazy, like her juggling all of these jobs. Further into this, we'll learn just how much she was, like, into, like, family and friends and church and... So she was juggling all of these things while also maintaining all of these relationships. And
yeah.
I sometimes feel like I struggle with working full time, having kids, mm-hmm, juggling what, you know, a little bit of friends that I do hang out with and the podcast, you know.
Right.
So I definitely think that somehow she was doing it and she was awesome at it.
Yeah.
So after a while, though, Matthew's motivation to go back to work diminished and he wasn't working much at all, like nada. And Lauren, who was, like I said, a very driven and independent person, continued to encourage Matthew to get out there, find a job. But instead, he just secluded himself more and more, just staying home and playing video games. Apparently, he was, like, really big into, like, online gaming, and I think some of it was through the Xbox. I'm not, like, extremely familiar with that kind of stuff, but I think it was, like, Xbox Live and competitive gaming or something.
Yeah. There's all kinds of stuff out there, too, where people can do the grunt work of, like, raising something or building something or
right,
creating it,
I've
and then they,
that,
like, you know, sell it to people for
so
real money.
Weird.
It is weird.
I mean, if you can do it and you can actually make money for it, like,
go for it.
But that doesn't seem like it was really the case in his situation.
He was probably one of the people buying that kind
right,
of stuff.
Right, and I think that's what it was. And, you know, understandably, this became an issue because he was investing all of the couple's money and savings into video games, Xbox gift cards, Amazon gift cards, and tons of other things that was related to... Like,
yeah,
all of this gaming and stuff.
Doesn't investing insinuate, like, for a good cause?
Well, I mean, in his mind, he thought he was doing something
okay,
good
so
for himself.
Really, what he was doing was
blowing
was
it.
Blowing her
yeah,
money.
Blowing it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm. And the totaling amount was over thousands of dollars.
Jesus.
I do know that when police tracked just what little bit they could see, it was like $1,200 just in that, like,
good God,
last month or so.
You could buy a beautiful classic style freaking Sig Sauer,
mm-hmm,
with that, you know?
Yeah, it was
or
crazy.
A crappy car.
Yeah. After he drained their bank account on the online gaming, Lauren had decided to cut him off of all access to their account.
Smart.
Yeah. And this man.
Man. Welcome back, everybody.
Man. This man. Sorry.
That's good stuff.
This meant that he would need to go directly to her if he needed money for anything at all. This, though, wasn't the worst of it in her eyes. Matthew had began to verbally, I cannot talk tonight, verbally abuse her over the 10 months that they had been married. And though she kind of just chalked it up to thinking that he might have been going through a difficult time because he couldn't find work, She did tell her family that she was worried about him. And this was also something that they agreed on because, again, they're like a super close-knit family and they looked at him as a son. And you know, they had noticed a change in his attitude and they began to worry about him as well. So Lauren's mother, Lori, had actually reached out to Matthew's grandma. She said she tried to reach out to her to ask for advice on, like, how to help Matthew, hoping that she would agree to, like, either talk him into seeing somebody or giving them some ideas about what to do. Mm-hmm. His grandmother only agreed to talk to him, which is kind of strange, I think.
Yeah.
However, this was as far as it went, and Matthew never saw any kind of help for his downward spiral through any of this.
Wow.
And I kind of, like, look back through this and think that maybe, you know, if she, not necessarily, I mean, I'm not blaming this on his grandma or anything, but, like, I think that she knew a lot more about him and his personality and his past, obviously,
right.
We find that out, than she even told the family. And I don't know, maybe if they had some sort of, like,
outlook. Intervention?
Yeah, on, like, what was going on, maybe, like, a lot of this could have been prevented in some way.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree.
Don't know. Just my thoughts on that.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Things started to get worse when Lauren's family was planning a trip to Disney World. Her sister had purchased everyone's tickets with the agreement that each person or couple would pay her back. Lauren had started to save cash to pay her back for the tickets she'd gotten for Lauren and Matthew. Soon after, Lauren noticed that her Disney World savings were gone. She instantly knew that Matthew had dipped into her savings, and she was more than hurt, more hurt than furious, because not only was it her dream to go to the happiest place on earth with all the people she loved, but he had stolen from her again.
Ugh.
Lauren had told Matthew that she wanted to make him a nice dinner on August 31st, 2017. And she told him that she also wanted to talk to him about the money troubles and his behavior, to which he agreed. However, when Lauren arrived home from work that evening, Matthew was gone. Apparently, a friend of his that was a salesman had stopped by to pitch a sale when Matthew had decided to go with this friend to help him with said sales. Lauren tried reaching Matthew by calling and texting, but he never responded to her. That night after closing out one of her Scentsy parties online, she called her sister, like she did most nights. This is when Lauren told her sister that she was ready to end the marriage. Though she was committed to her church, she said that she felt that she had done all she could when it came to Matthew, and things were getting worse. She told her sister about their plans for the night and how Matthew had left without telling her, along with his unwillingness to respond to any of her text messages. They talked for a while about these issues before Lauren sent her a goodnight text around 11 p.m., letting her know that she was not going to wait up for Matthew and she was just going to go to bed. Just after 1 a.m., a 911 call came through the Wake County Dispatch.
911, what's the address of your emergency?
Okay, just repeat that address, make sure we have it right.
Is she awake at all right now? What makes you think she's dead? Is she awake?
She's not breathing.
Okay.
Oh, my God.
Okay, do you think she is beyond any help?
I don't know. I'm too scared to get too close to her.
Okay, just stay on the phone with me, sir. I'm here with you. I'm here with you.
I'm so scared.
All right, I've already sent the paramedics to help you, okay? I'm sending someone to assist you. Just please leave everything as you found it. Is there anything else we can do for you, sir? Where's the knife right now?
I saw the bed. I'm not next to it, so I don't have a weapon on me or anything like that.
Okay, when did you wake up?
I don't know. I took more medicine than I should have.
What medicine did you take?
I took chloroquine, cough and cold, chloroquine, HCT, cough and cold, because I know it can make you feel good, so a lot of times I can't sleep at night.
Okay.
I took some.
All right, sir. But what, are you sure your wife's not breathing?
She's not moving. Oh, my God.
Okay, I'm gonna stay here with you, okay? Let's at least see if she's breathing, okay?
Alright, let's provide her.
Can you see her from where you're at?
Yeah, it's so bad. There's no blood.
Okay, alright. I'm gonna stay here on the phone with you to help get there, okay? Just don't touch anything. Just look at your wife. Is she breathing at all? Is her chest moving? Is anything going on with her?
No.
Okay, well, we're gonna leave.
The blood is dried on me.
It's dried?
The blood's not wet on me. The blood is dry. So I don't know what happened.
All right, well, at least we're gonna at least try to help her, okay? All right, just give me this. All right, I've already sent the paramedics to help you. Just tell what I'm gonna tell you exactly what to do next, okay? Are you right by her, Mr. Phelps?
Oh, my God. I mean, I can see her, but oh, my God.
Stay with me, sir. I know this is upset, but we were going to try to do as much for her as you can. If you're not sure that she's gone, we're going to try to help her, okay? So just listen carefully. Listen, okay, sir? All right, just look at her right now. Can you tell me what you see? Is the chest moving? Is she breathing? Anything at all?
Under North Carolina state law, the versions of that call that are available to the public have been modified, and a lot of things have been left out, kind of bleeped out sort of thing.
Right.
This particular version is...
It's from the sentence hearing.
Yeah.
The sentencing hearing. Mm-hmm. it's a very... I don't know. That call is just... It's a little bit different. I think he kind of gives himself away a few times, and we'll kind of learn that, like, as we get further down.
Right.
Kind of sets himself up almost, and calls himself out on a couple of things, really, to be honest with you.
And to be frank, like, just his demeanor and his mannerisms and the way that he presents himself during most of the phone call is irritating to me. Like, I listen to this like 100 times probably, maybe a little less than that, but not too far from 100. And we can get into like my opinions of where I think it all leads and what it points out to if you want to, or I can go into that now,
yeah,
however you want
yeah.
to. Right now?
Yeah.
We'll do it now. We're going to do it right now. Okay, so unfortunately, the version that I had was the
like voiceover? Or
not a voiceover. Like a voice it's a distorter,
yeah.
so to speak. So like everyone's voice is lower mm-hmm. and slower, and they just slow it down.
Which makes it way worse.
Way worse. It's very, very way different. And it just, it's...
It makes him seem, like, extremely emotionless.
It does.
And, like, this is what was released into the public initially.
Right, right. But, nevertheless, he still seems dense
and
with the whole thing.
Really, still.
Pretty emotionless. The only time that he actually would tear up is when the dispatcher would make mention of...
Right, yeah.
Of his wife. You know, like, hey... You know, like, are you sure she's not breathing? Da, 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 da. Whenever his attention was drawn back to her, then he would be like, oh, shit, I need to, like, cry and you know, have some voice cracks and stuff like right. that. Otherwise, they're going to be like, oh, he's a cold-hearted son of a bitch or whatever. Or, I don't know.
Well, I think it was interesting, too. Like, in any case, no matter what's going on, the dispatcher will always try to get the caller to check the victim.
Yeah.
Make sure they're breathing, like,
right.
attempt to do, like,
anything
CPR.
That they can to
yeah, anything.
Keep
and
them alive.
And he was just like, he even said, like, I don't want to.
I'm too scared to get
like,
close to
what
her.
Are you scared of?
Yeah,
she's
what?
Not going to, like, attack you like a zombie or something. Like, I just thought that was absolutely ridiculous.
Right.
It goes to show that he was, like, in no way, shape, or form concerned about saving her life or
right.
regardless if he knew she was already dead. Like, he has a trained person on the line giving him instructions, and he wasn't even attempting it.
Right. He wasn't even going to hear what he had to say.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
He was
and
like, nope. Mm-mm.
You could also tell that the dispatcher, you know, when he first started the conversation and answered the phone, he almost sounded irritated and annoyed.
Yeah.
You know, like, this is my job. I do this mm-hmm. 9 to 5 every day, all day. And as the conversation progressed, you know, and he found out, okay, this dude just killed somebody and stuff like that, his anxiety level rose a
yeah.
lot substantially
yeah.
and his concern level and stuff like that. So it was neat to watch him become more engaging and stuff
yeah.
like that and almost sympathetic to a certain degree, you know,
yeah.
like,
yeah.
I understand the situation sucks, but we've got to do everything
do
that we can
yeah.
to help her, to keep her alive and stuff like that. We can touch back on that a little bit later in the episode. For now, let us continue.
When police and paramedics arrived, the scene was horrific. Homicide detectives stated that it was one of the most brutal scenes they had ever walked in on. Lauren laid on the floor of the couple's bedroom in the fetal position on her right side at the end of the bed with 123 stab wounds to her face, neck, arms, and torso. The deepest stab wound being 4 inches. Lauren also had clumps of hair in her hand, a knife bloodied up to the handle laid on the bed. And after inspecting the house, police found that the kitchen knife did in fact come from the knife block in their kitchen, as there was one missing from the set that matched the one that was found on the bed.
Yeah.
So they were able to kind of like, you know, link that,
right.
which I'm sure they probably kind of assumed in the beginning.
My problem is that I don't think anywhere in anything that we researched was it ever revealed which specific knife it was.
I think in the sense, so the
they
the,
showed photos
the
in the court hearing,
hearing,
but we were unable to see
yeah.
those from the camera angles, you know.
I think that her sister did mention at one point that it was a paring knife, but I could be misremembering that because, I mean, again, that was a 4 hour long
right.
Video
and
that I watched.
That was also my thought process,
yeah.
That it would be a paring knife because right. Either that or a small steak knife.
I
because,
mean, 123 stab wounds is a lot.
Yes, and a small knife, like, she was alive for each and every one of those stab mm-hmm. wounds.
Yeah, it was pretty brutal. They also found in the kitchen a Coricidin box on the counter and an empty package in front of the box neatly laid out, giving police the feeling that this was placed there just like that, purposely.
Yeah, staged.
Mm-hmm. Detective Jackson, who was assigned as the lead on this case, stated that despite Matthew's claim in the 911 call of being covered in blood, He only had spots of blood on his face and under his fingernails, indicating that he had tried to clean himself up before calling 911.
Well, that's interesting.
He also had a small injury on his knee consistent with rug burn. So, again, there's another thing that they, like, definitely were able to kind of, like, link him to it. Even though he confessed, but with, like, evidential, you know.
Well, up to that point, he hadn't confessed, though.
Well, he did in the 911 call.
He said he stabbed her.
Yeah, right.
He was very, very, very far away from the details of what
totally.
I stabbed her mm-hmm. means.
Yeah.
You hear someone say, I stabbed my wife, you think maybe three times? Right.
But, I mean, he was confessing to it, though.
Yeah,
Detective Jackson also stated that he and his team arrived at the Phelps home. When they arrived at the Phelps home, Matthew showed very little to almost no emotion, and he never shed any actual tears. And again, despite Matthew's claim of taking a lot of cold medicine, he seemed very responsive, and he was able to maintain conversation. So, like, a lot of things he said just didn't match up with the scene. Like, you know, mm-hmm. the scene versus the 911 call.
Right.
After arresting Matthew, Jackson ordered a toxicology report to be ran on Matthew's blood level. And it was concluded that there was an excessive amount of chloroquine in his system. But it was absolutely not fatal. And they said he still would have been functioning enough that he would be able to still, at that point, drive a vehicle.
Uh-huh.
So it's kind of crazy.
Yeah, it sounds to me, just with the information that we've already provided, that I could deduce that he's a cold-blooded murderer.
Mm, absolutely.
And he is essentially trying to cover his ass.
Oh, yeah.
In hopes that he won't get in as much trouble.
Totally agree.
As if he just, like, you know, was like, yo, I murdered her, dude, yeah. Straight up.
Other experts agreed that it was not a toxic level of chloroquine. Even Bayer, the makers of chloroquine, made a statement claiming that in all of the studies, they monitor all side effects closely and have never seen any violent tendencies, hallucinations at, like, that level or
right.
any behavior related to what Matthew claimed that he experienced.
Right, because they have to do extensive mm-hmm. testing on any kinds of medications, new medications
right.
and things like that before they can release it to the public, mm-hmm. or at least they should.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
And bigger companies like that most certainly do.
Yeah. While Matthew was being interviewed by police, Lauren was being rushed to the hospital where she was pronounced dead at 1:43 a.m. on September 1st, 2017. Though paramedics tried their best to save Lauren, her injuries were just far too significant. And once Matthew was actually taken into custody for the murder of his wife, Lauren, he was held without bail at the Wake County Jail. It was during the sentencing hearing in which Matthew pled guilty to the first-degree murder charges.
In the opening statements, the prosecutor talked about the couple's money problems and how Lauren was a very hardworking young woman, born with a heart for success. She spoke about Lauren's dream of opening up her own Hallmark store, mm-hmm. how Lauren's work ethic would consist of juggling working multiple jobs to cover the couple's living expenses, while Matthew had no intentions to work a steady and or a stable job, constantly bouncing from job to job, all the while still spending money faster than Lauren could make it in order to purchase things for his online gaming addictions, which again totaled to thousands of dollars, and how this left the couple with very little money, giving everyone an idea of how Matthew was not financially level-headed. He's not very level-headed about many things.
Yeah.
Throughout the trial, it was found that though Lauren often doted over Matthew on social media and expressed her love for him, her family said that Lauren had become unhappy in the marriage due to Matthew's verbal abuse and financial carelessness. They also confirmed the fact that Lauren was considering ending the marriage. Sadly, the phone conversation that Lauren had with her sister that we talked about earlier would be the last time that anyone would get to speak to her, because her life was cruelly ended by her husband of just under a year. The prosecutor stated that because Lauren wanted to end the marriage, this was the root cause of Lauren's death because, air quotes, Matthew would never give her the chance to walk away alive, end air quotes.
You know, speaking of the social media part of this, we see this in a lot of places too, just in everyday life, like a lot of people putting things on social media that behind closed doors, things are a lot different.
Absolutely.
You know, and sometimes I think that's why a lot of people are so shocked when some things happen.
Right.
Because
why would anybody lie about how their life's going?
Right. And I think that sometimes people almost play a dangerous game of like putting too much information out there.
Oh, yeah.
Or sometimes trying to make things seem a little different than what it is.
Right.
And don't get me wrong, like I totally understand, especially when there's like abuse going on and things, like most people don't really put that
right.
stuff out there for yeah. other people, you know. And again, she was young and she was probably, actually I know by reading the story, how much faith she had in the fact that things were going to get better for
right.
them, you know.
Yeah.
So it is very sad.
Super, super sad. It's terrible.
Mm-hmm.
I've always been devastated to read about or hear about like these young kids, and I mean young kids, like teenagers, like 18-year-olds, 16-year-olds, whatever. They think they fall in love,
yeah.
and then, you know, the other person doesn't feel mutually, and they want to break up or what mm-hmm. have you, and the other person's either homicidal or the
yeah.
suicidal, you know, like, why?
And they get sucked into staying in these bad relationships
or,
of abuse.
Then there's that, too.
You know?
There's, like, a lot of times, and men can be abused as well.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
there are plenty of women out there that are physically abusive and verbally abusive as well.
Definitely.
And people get, I think they're scared more than anything.
Mm-hmm. The autopsy performed by the Wake County Medical Examiner showed that Lauren had suffered many wounds, much of which were significant from the 123 stab wounds. They also concluded that none of the wounds had occurred post-mortem. So this means that Lauren was completely aware and alive and endured this brutal and painful murder through it all.
Yeah.
All 123 stab wounds.
Her
because,
blood was pumping. She was alive.
Absolutely. Because Matthew did not stop stabbing her until she died.
Right.
In addition, they were also able to conclude that she put up an extremely exhausting fight.
Yeah.
Due to the fact that she had over dozens of defensive wounds on both of her arms and hands, including a dislocated finger from one of the stabs.
Yeah, I believe they had the numbers of everything. The ones that I remember, 42 were puncture wounds into mm-hmm. the chest, neck area, and stuff like that. She had over 30 on one of her arms.
Yeah.
Like slash
it's,
wounds.
It's pretty crazy.
And then a little less than 20 on the other arm, mm-hmm. and
some of these went clear to the bone on her arms, and not to be too graphic, unfortunately, one of them in her neck went pretty far in. It actually ended up catching her jugular,
mm-hmm.
Or her carotid, one of
carotid.
The two, and they had stated
right.
that even if that would have happened first, it still would have taken several minutes
yeah.
before she would have lost consciousness.
And bled out,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
It's very, very sad. She had a very brutal murder, like they said. Each one of the stab wounds, like I said, were so brutal that she was unable to do one of the last things that she wanted at the end of her life, which was to be an organ donor. She wanted her organs to go to people that needed them because she would no longer need them.
Right.
And again, she was such a kind person. This is just the type of person that she was.
Kind, godly woman.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But her body and her organs were just way too damaged to be used for any donating and transplants. This is another thing that her family felt that he took from her even after death.
And from
even
other people.
Death.
Even like other people that could have
yeah,
received those organs
definitely.
And stuff. He sabotaged so many people's lives and futures.
Right. It's
and all because he's a big, giant baby
mm-hmm.
because
she didn't want
he can't accept
anymore.
The fact that he's a piece of shit scumbag and she didn't want to be with him anymore. Did he offer to change? Did he make any attempts? No.
No.
He just stayed in his own little selfish bubble of me, 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 me. Mm-hmm. I get what I want.
And it really sounds like she tried a lot of different
yeah,
things to
absolutely.
To help him, you know. It, she was very loyal to him.
Yeah.
She was.
And she had every right not to be.
Mm-hmm.
because he wasn't. Maybe he didn't cheat on her or anything like that, but he was the furthest from loyal to her that anyone could be. Now, we sat through the 4-hour-long sentencing hearing. The majority of this hearing included the victim impact statements from many of the people in Lauren's life, including her family, friends, co-workers, and fellow church members. One by one, they made their way to the front of the courtroom to address the judge, everyone there, and even Matthew. The judge at one point made recognition that he had never seen the courtroom filled with as many people for a case as there were for Lauren, each one wearing a hashtag Lauren's Light shirt with a purple ribbon representing domestic violence. Each person spoke about the impact that the murder of Lauren had on their lives, but they were sure to talk more about the impact that her memory had on their lives. It was very clear that Lauren was a kind, caring person that loved everyone she met in her life. She cherished every moment with her family, especially her nephews. The one thing they all mentioned was how much she loved Matthew, even when they hit their hard times in their marriage and how shocking the entire situation was. They all stated that it wasn't just Lauren that loved Matthew, but each one of her family members loved him and took him in from day one. During the trial, a lot about Matthew, some of which was unknown to everyone, came to light. Lauren's father, Dale, spoke about Matthew's upbringing, how his mother was never in his life, and that they treated him like more of a son than his own mother did. His mother had him when she was only 17 after her parents, Matthew's grandparents, insisted that she keep him, despite the fact they were very religious. His biological father was not in his life, and his mother had a few failed marriages. This was something that was difficult on Matthew getting close to the men he looked at as fathers, only for them to leave. Then his mother decided that she no longer wanted to raise him and left him with his grandparents. They were older farmers. They didn't have much time for Matthew, although they did provide a good life for him. They found that Matthew had not been honest with Lauren and her family. He hid, in their opinion, many horrifying things from them. He had a second secret private Instagram account where he went by the name Marty Radical. This is where he would post violent quotes, post pictures from the movie American Psycho, pictures of murder scenes, pictures of himself dressed in all black, smoking cigarettes, and a lot of other very dark posts. The very last post on this account before he murdered Lauren, he said, "Now I have my angel to kill." They stated that it was song lyrics from the band Korn, but we were never able to find that. Mm-hmm. In fact, I Googled it, and I tried different variations of, you know, angel to kill, now I have my angel to kill, I have my angel to kill, right, whatever. And I could not find a single song with those lyrics in it.
Yeah.
So you had mentioned something.
Yeah, I was thinking that, like, there was a possibility that maybe he... like, had planned this, and he was trying to cover it up by, like...
saying it was song lyrics.
Yeah, being like, oh, this is a quote now, from a Korn song.
I could see a religious person, such as him. I mean, he's probably still religious throughout all this,
right,
you know? Now I have my angel to kill, you know? Like,
it's very strange.
It's strange, sure, but, I mean...
yeah,
it sounds like something a religious person would say if they were going to go murder somebody.
I get, yeah, I see what you're saying, yeah.
I mean, I know plenty of super, super religious people that cuss worse than sailors,
definitely.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And they even use the GD and the JC.
I've seen that before, too, yeah.
It doesn't mean that they don't love God.
Right. I do feel sorry for them because I couldn't imagine, like, finding out. That would be shocking.
Absolutely.
All of this stuff would be very, very shocking to find out only after your daughter has been brutally murdered. It's very sad. Man, this case is so sad.
Absolutely.
The Instagram account was not the worst of what he hid from them. They found out that when he was first arrested, he told Detective Jackson that this wasn't the first time something like this had happened. He stated that he had unknowingly been violent once before. He went on to say that he had drug his first wife out of bed in the middle of the night and down the hallway by her hair. Once prosecutors heard about this, they did in fact speak with his first wife, and she confirmed his story, but stated that the incident was not the only time, but that he had held her down on the bed in a fit of rage in another incident. She claimed that she was sure that he was fully aware of what he was doing during each of these attacks, and she then filed for divorce, which is totally understandable.
Absolutely.
Police had already been questioning his claim that he was incoherently attacking Lauren the night that he murdered her. But after speaking with his first wife, they were sure that his claims were no more than just a mere way of avoiding responsibility for murdering Lauren.
Right.
The family and friends of Lauren and Matthew were in complete and total shock to find that not only had he never disclosed that he had been married before, but none of his family members ever mentioned his violent attacks. The prosecutor also told the courts that when they sprayed luminol, which is a detectant for blood, the house lit up. They found that Matthew did in fact try to clean up the mess when he attacked Lauren. There were traces of blood in the bathroom sink, the walls, and the floor in the bathroom. It was just splattered all over. And even in the bedroom near where Lauren's body laid, he had tried to clean up pools of blood in there as well. And as we mentioned before, this in fact told police that, again, if his claim of being in such a sedated state during all of this, he would absolutely not have been aware enough to clean the scene, including himself, up before calling 911.
Right. If you're cooked out of your mind on any kind of thing that is supposed to help you sleep, you're not going to be proactive enough to do much of anything except sleep.
Yeah, you're not going to be sleepwalking and doing all of this stuff. All of this stuff.
Absolutely preposterous.
Mm-hmm. They were certain that he had lied about being in an unconscious state while he stabbed his wife, and that he did not care about getting any help at all for Lauren, but rather only cared about himself.
Right.
Taking
care
of himself, cleaning himself up.
Oh, I'm so scared.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And another thing, too, they know that he did not clean up after the 911 call because he was actually on the phone with the operator until police arrived. And we heard that in the 911 call that we played earlier, too.
Yes.
So, interesting.
Very interesting. Mm-hmm. Maybe he was cleaning up while he was on the phone.
I wondered
you know,
that. I really did wonder. I wondered about that.
I'm pretty sure that he committed the crime, the murder, the deed, whatever, and waited a while before he tried doing anything, cleaning anything up, especially before he called. Like, he called way later.
I think the timeline's very interesting, too, because if she went to bed at 11 and he was not home, and he's calling just a little after 1 a.m., so he was not there when she went to bed at 11. He came home somewhere between 11 and 1, that's two hours, had enough time to take medication, fall into a deep sleep, get up, do all of this stuff, and then call 911 in a short two-hour span.
Yeah,
I don't think so. I think he came home knowing that she was going to leave him, and he went into a fit of rage while she was asleep and started stabbing her. That is what I honestly believe.
I believe that is a very compelling opinion, and I agree.
It's so frustrating to me.
It's very frustrating.
So the family also found out that Matthew had become friends with a female neighbor of him and Lauren's. And over time, the two had spoke often, basically relating to each other due to their depression. Being depressed was another thing that he hid from Lauren and her family. Like I said earlier, like they kind of had an idea, but it wasn't something that he was like open about. They started off their friendship by venting about their problems relating to their depressions, like I said. But after a while, and just 2 months before Lauren was murdered, the friend said she distanced herself from Matthew. She claimed that he started talking heavily about suicide in like a very nonchalant way. He talked about taking her concealed carry weapon and shooting himself and others.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, and she said it was all just, like, way too alarming, and she stopped speaking to him because of this.
Did she say anything to anyone else?
I
like,
don't
she
think
should've?
She did.
Well,
I don't
obviously
think she
said
didn't. Anything until
God.
Afterwards.
Come on. Yeah, great. They always tell everybody afterwards, which is super helpful. Come on, people. Watch the news. Listen to a true crime podcast once in a while and get a friggin' clue. This is absurd. Like, this shit's been going on for hundreds of years, and we still do it the same friggin' way. Yeah. Like,
I mean, there are a lot. It's people. I don't know. I don't know why they don't say anything, but it happens.
I should have said something.
Well, yeah. You should have said something. You should have just walked away with your tail tucked between your legs and not even embarrassed yourself about it. Jesus. During the sentencing hearing, Matthew never showed much emotion, if any. He would nod his head in agreement with Lauren's loved ones when they would go up and read their statements. But besides this, there wasn't much of any remorse of emotion shown during the very heart-wrenching hearing. And it was heart-wrenching. Mm-hmm. Like, it was a lot of sobbing and crying and really, really, really emotional.
It took me a couple weeks to finish it, and I had to because I kept tearing up, and it's very emotional.
It is. But, you know, it's good and it's positive because they were talking about...
Oh, yeah,
you know,
definitely.
They were kind of celebrating the life
yeah,
of Lauren.
Mm-hmm,
you know?
A lot of stories.
Yeah. None of Matthew's family showed up for any of his trial hearings, not even for his sentencing hearing, where he pled guilty to first-degree murder charges. Besides from his attorney and legal team that his family did hire for him, he was alone through it all, and this goes to show just how disconnected his family was and how much of an amazing family and life he had through Lauren until he horrifically ended her life. Matthew's attorney, Joe Cheshire, spoke about the untreated depression that Matthew dealt with his entire life and how it mostly controlled him. He also spoke on Matthew's childhood and how that had a large effect on his development and mental health. He stated that Matthew couldn't stand the thought of Lauren leaving him, so instead he snapped and did the unthinkable. He asked that everyone keep in mind that he is no longer claiming that he unknowingly committed the murder of Lauren, but instead he is pleading guilty. He thanked the family and the courts for sparing Matthew's life by throwing out the death penalty as part of the plea deal and giving him life in prison without the possibility of parole. Joe Cheshire also spoke about Matthew's troubles in school and how he started hanging out with the wrong crowd and started abusing cold medication to get high. Another thing he hid from the Hugelmeyers until his grandparents pulled him from public school and enrolled him in a Christian academy, in which he excelled. He told the courtroom that he believed that Matthew was a true Christian but had a terrible battle with his depression, though he was doing much better once he started receiving treatment after his arrest. he also did mention that, you know, like, the lawyer also, Matthew's lawyer, mm-hmm. also mentioned that, you know, by no means was he trying to, you know, bring this to light as an excuse
right.
for his actions
and,
or his
like,
behavior.
Show disrespect to Lauren yeah. or her family.
He was actually, like, a really, like, respectable
yeah.
attorney.
I agree.
Like, I did appreciate him and the mm-hmm. way that he handled everything, you know.
Yeah, I know, like, during a lot of the trials up until the sentencing hearing, he had kind of mentioned Lauren as the young lady. Mm-hmm. And during the victim impact statement, like, her family was like, you know, I understand where they're coming from. They were like, she has a name and it's
yeah.
Lauren.
Yeah.
And then at the end of all of this, when he was talking, he did apologize and was like, I meant absolutely no disrespect.
Right. Yeah.
You know, it's just, it's kind of like language and terms that we use in the courtroom.
Right.
And
yeah.
he did seem like a very nice mm-hmm. guy, honestly.
And honestly, in a way, like, it's a psychological thing. It's an involuntary thing that a lot of people do that we do. As humans, especially in a situation or a circumstance such as that, we do little things like that with how we mm-hmm. say certain things to distance ourselves
right.
from that
it
situation.
Could have
been something. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like, for instance, in most cases when we do our podcast, she does all the research, right? I told you this before. Kayla is the
I'm
boss.
The smarts of it all.
And I'm pretty smart. I'm smart. I have brains and stuff. I got intelligence. But anywho, so like, I'm usually a little more detached or distanced from the people
yeah.
within the, you know, that we do the podcast on or whatever, the episodes on. And that allows me to
keep it light
and use my yeah. humor a bit more. And I don't think I've been very funny in this one. I've been pretty serious. And it's because it is...
You're more involved in this
I'm super
one
involved in this one, I think. Mm-hmm. I'm not super involved, but a lot more involved than the rest of them. And I just... I don't know. It's traumatic. It's mm-hmm. terrible. It's horrible.
Yes.
What he did. And I have no respect for the guy yeah. whatsoever. And I really do feel absolutely horrible for all the people that no longer get to see Lauren's face.
There were a lot of people there too.
And hear her voice. Yes, there were. We even mentioned that could have been a simple, maybe it was somebody that like she goes to a used to go to a gas station.
Yeah.
Sorry for the stuttering. and didn't know the person behind the counter, and they didn't know her, but
every day she every had day, a smile on her face,
you know, and that brightened their day. Yeah. That could have saved that person's life, you yeah. know, in and some roundabout way. Like she touched and affected so many other people's lives. Mm-hmm. That I can, I'm sure of it.
It's amazing. Yeah, it really is amazing. So Matthew did give a statement before the hearing came to a close and the ruling was entered. After looking around the courtroom at Lauren's supporters, Matthew went on to say, "I'm sorry that I took away Lauren's life, a life that was deeply connected to so many people, her family, her friends, her church, her coworkers, and especially her nephews. And though I am the very least of these, I took her away from myself. This was a senseless, mindless act, and I regret every step that led me in that direction. Lauren was loving, caring, giving, and hardworking. Smart, fun, fashionable, and loyal. She was a daughter, a sister, a friend, a leader, a teacher, and an aunt. I consider my own life worth nothing in the shadow of the tragedy weighing over my mind and on the hearts of so many people here today. I feel like a monster, one of the wretched, a part of the darkness that we don't speak of. That darkness consumed me until I was blind to the path I had taken and deaf to my own cries for help. That darkness caused me to do the unimaginable, to take the life that was not mine to take. No length of time will ease my inner sorrow or relieve me of the memory of such a godless act as my hand in which I thought incapable of doing have committed, and I will have to live with these hands as a constant reminder. I hope my life will be an example for those who think that drinking and drugs and carelessness will only affect themselves and no one else. Be not deceived. God is not mocked. For whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. Because I now know the implement of my actions reach far beyond more people than I realized. The people who are the most important in my life, and I am sorry. I am sorry to all of these people, even though I will never be able to make up for the loss and the grief that I have caused all of you. I hope that you will see that I am doing everything I can from here on to show you that I am sorry." Yeah, so that, I don't know.
I haven't really analyzed his closing statement or anything like that. This is probably the third time that I've heard it or read it or went over it. And, again, it's got a lot of me in it, mm-hmm. Despite his best efforts, I suppose. And some strange word choices here and there as well.
I agree.
I don't like the guy.
Well, I agree. I think that, like, well, during the trial, he, like, showed absolutely no emotion. Like, he literally did nothing but, like, nod every once in a while.
Yeah, and he had this, like, puppy dog look on his face, like, shit, man, I'm in trouble.
Mm-hmm. And then he comes out with this, with yeah. this big...
It's pretty wordy. It's yeah. pretty well thought out.
And it sounds good.
And it sounds good, yeah.
But where was all of this, in my opinion, where was all of this during everything else?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, maybe he is sorry and maybe he's regretful, but a lot of times they're usually regretful because...
They got caught.
They're in trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not because... You know, they screwed up and they realize that and they're like, oh, shit, you know, I screwed up.
Yeah. But again,
and I'm sorry.
No. Mental health comes into play in a lot of these, too.
Yeah. But it's not an excuse to kill people.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Thank God that the only future relationships he's going to have are going to be with people that are bigger than him yeah. and stronger than him and a whole lot meaner than him.
So, Lauren's father, Dale Hugelmeyer, said that he will never be able to forgive Matthew, and that he believed that Matthew had planned the entire thing from the beginning. Dale said, "I'll take this to my grave, and I'll still hate him."
And I support that. I support that 110%.
Yeah.
I don't think that a father should have to forgive the man who killed his daughter.
When he should have been, Matthew should have been the one protecting her.
Yeah, absolutely. Not killing her.
Right. And I know that Dale actually stated that, like, he pretty much let his guard down with Matthew, and he yeah. will never, ever do that again.
Well, of course not. He'll
make sure that, you know, his other daughters are... He can't afford to. Yeah, it's very sad. Very sad case.
It is.
So, yeah, that's the cold medicine killer case.
Yep. And just to reiterate and emphasize on how much of a weasel this weasel is, little marsupial... Phelps has been recorded saying something like, the reason he has facial hair and wanted to keep his hair long was because it gave the illusion of an older appearance and stuff like that. So he could, like, you know, hopefully command some respect while he's in prison. But, yeah. Cause he's a small, frail guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he's very meek and pathetic looking.
Well, in a lot of, pictures of him before all of this, he was like very clean cut, shaved. And then, later on, as the trials progress and he's in the sentencing hearing, he comes out looking like Tom Hanks and what's that movie where he gets stranded on the island?
Suburbicon.
No, where he gets stranded on the island and he has like the ball that's like his friend.
Balls of
the
Fury.
Volleyball. I can't remember what Wilson. It's called. Yes.
Castaway.
Yes, Castaway.
Boom. Thank Nailed you. It.
First try. So he's like very like scruffy and like
he looks
crazy
like
grown out hair. It's very strange look, but.
He reminds me of one of the other serial killers from like the 70s or something like that. Yeah. Not that he's a serial killer.
Like,
I mean, like.
He does have like Charles Manson like hair going on. Yeah. Definitely the beard and the like the head of
he's
hair.
He's probably like, oh, people think I'm Charles Manson. They'll leave me alone.
Maybe. I don't know.
Please don't bother me. Sorry. I had to.
Oh, God. You guys, this is what I put up with all the time.
Do you guys have any chloroseine? What's up? I'll give you guys one of my beard hairs for your chloroseine.
You know what you remind me of? You remind me of the
Matt
kid
Phelps.
From Hey Arnold when she's like, like she like double fists him in the face or like fists him in the face.
Like a
rear
punch.
Hey, stoop kid. Get off your stoop.
Yeah. He's definitely a stupid kid. Screw this guy.
So, make sure you guys come and follow us on the gram of Instas.
Yep. That is a place where I believe we can also send each other voice messages if the need.
Right. Communicate. Oh, we're both rocking our Hello, My Name is True Crime shirts tonight.
Yeah, we are.
During our recording.
We took a photo.
What?
Didn't we have a photo op?
Yes.
We had like a little photo sesh.
There's pictures on the gram.
Yeah.
Of our shirts. Go check them out. They're super cute.
They're dorbs.
They're popping.
Dorbsies.
They're bomb. Also, make sure to rate and review us on
Apple Podcast.
Yeah. And if you let us know that you do, we'll send you some stickers.
We will.
Mm-hmm.
But that
we're
means,
actually sending a bunch of them out tomorrow.
Yes.
What?
We are to these people. And here are their addresses and social security numbers.
No,
just kidding.
So FYI, some of you guys have snail mail coming.
Yeah.
It's fun. I get excited when I get like good mail.
Yeah, I know. Because like all too often you get
bills
shit
and
mail.
Junk.
Yeah, it's like, here, nameless people that live at this address, here is your opportunity for this cable
this
package.
Internet.
You know, or this internet.
Yeah.
Or just dumb crap.
Totally
or like
agree.
My least favorite thing is when you get those big pieces of colored paper from like Rite Aid or whatever and it's like sale items.
Oh,
I don't want that shit.
Yeah. It's
I don't
silly.
Care. If I go to Rite Aid, I'll be going for a purpose.
Right. Yes.
I don't need incentive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, I digress.
Good. I will make sure to link the video, the 4-hour long video of the sentencing hearing for those of you that want to watch it.
Yes, the full 4-hour long.
Yeah, just be prepared that, like we said, it's a very emotional.
Super
emotional.
Yeah,
and there's a lot of details in it as well. So keep that in mind before you go watch it. And I guess we will see you, well, not see you, but talk to you guys next time.
Yes, thank you very much for coming out.
Yeah, we love you.
We
yes.
do. Yep.
Yes. Okay, guys. Bye.
Bye. Peace out. Hasta luego.
Toodaloo. Mountain Dew.
Yeah.
That was really bad.
See you later, crocodile. Wait.
Bye, guys.
Bye, alligators.
Rawr. What?
Critter?
Crime critters.
Bye, crime critters.
Bye, crime critters.
Bye, crime critters.
Bye.
That was a Titancast episode.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, place. And spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.